Good evening, everybody. It's wonderful to be back with you again. I always enjoy coming and sharing with you an update on what the Lord is doing in the great nation of Brazil. And we'll see if the remote's going to work. Probably not. There it is. In 1967, my family and I, along with eight other families, boarded a ship bound for Brazil. And our destination in Brazil would be Belo Horizonte, a city of 5.5 million people today, a city where there were no Christians and no churches at that time. And in fact, there were only 3 or 4 churches in all of Brazil at that time. And we had a dream and a vision for the church in Belo Horizonte, a vision that it would grow and become strong and become a missionary center to send out missionaries all over that part of Brazil and even beyond. In 1973, 6 years after we'd been there, we had 7 congregations in the city, and my family and I decided to start a new congregation in a new housing development where they were building 6,500 houses and apartment buildings, and there weren't any churches in the area of any kind, and so we felt like that would be a great place to start a new congregation. The people moving into all of those buildings and houses would leave their churches behind and their friends behind, and they would need churches. So we'd be there to welcome them, and we did get, were able to start the first church in that whole area. In fact, even today, there's only one Catholic church in that area. I helped them to build the first stage of the building right there while I was with them, and then when my first wife passed away, then I had to leave and come back to the States for a while to be close to my children who were at LCU in Lubbock. And they continued to build on the building, and that's the way it looks today. It's on a main thoroughfare, and it's a great location. There is the auditorium of it. They have about 220 in attendance, and the auditorium will seat about 220. So you can see they've got a problem, a great problem to have. They're going to have to do something about finding more room. They're hoping to buy a lot next door to them or something so they can enlarge their building. And that church, by the way, has helped to start 8 or 9 other congregations. It's been a real missionary church. And then in 1986, when Sandy, my wife, was with me, we decided to start a new congregation in the middle of downtown Belo Horizonte. And you may say, well, why in the world would you want to start a church in the middle of the downtown area of a huge city? We don't do that here, do we? But it happens that at that time, at least 90 or 80% of all Brazilians that went to church went by public transportation. And all the public transportation went straight downtown. So that was the best place to be to reach people from all over the city. After a while, we were able to buy the building that you see there, remodel it, and it's a beautiful building on a main avenue in the downtown area. There's the auditorium of it. It'll seat about 700 people. The church there grew rapidly until they had about 335 members. But then they began to plant other churches, and when they planted them, each time a group of 20 or 30 people would go off to plant the new church, and that would diminish the size of the downtown church until finally they're down to about 220 people today. I'm trying to convince them that they need to stop planting other churches for a little while to grow some more, and then they can start planting again. But they've started about 14 other churches, so we're proud of the congregation there. In the first year that we were in Belo Horizonte, we bought property to build a camp. We did that because all of us in the team nearly had been involved in Christian camping before we went down there, and we were sold on the value of Christian camps for young people and even for older people. So we bought it, and recently we built the building that you see there, and now the camp has a capacity of about 250 people. And every year at carnival time, that's their biggest holiday, week-long holiday, we have about 250 young people out there. We also use it for men's retreats and women's retreats and for children's camps and for evangelistic camps and congregational retreats. And so it's very well used and has been a great blessing to the church there. When my first wife died, I built the chapel that you see there in memory of her. And that chapel has had thousands and thousands of people to sit in it. And you can look through the back of it, which is all glass, and you can see the mountains and the valley on the other side. Beautiful place to worship the Lord. We now have 25 congregations in Belo Horizonte, and we're thankful for that. This picture was taken when all of the 25 congregations were meeting together in the convention center downtown. But because we have 25 congregations, in fact, there's another 15 in the rest of the states, 40 in all, then we need a lot of well-qualified preachers and teachers and men who can be elders in the future. And as we continue to multiply new congregations, we'll need more and more well-prepared people. And so we felt like the answer for that, my son-in-law, Mike Ford, that you know, that spent some time here with you all, and Melody, my daughter, he had had a dream for years of planting a church in an area called El Dorado, which is a suburb of Belo Horizonte, and it's a city of about 750,000 people, of starting a new church there. And I had had that dream also independent of him. So we got our two dreams together and decided to start a new congregation there. And as we talked about it, and as we dreamed, and as we planned, this is the vision that we had and still have for the El Dorado Church. It would be a missionary church, training and sending out workers to plant churches in all of the other large cities all around it. This is a map of the state of Minas Gerais, and the red circle in the middle is the city of Belo Horizonte, which is the capital city. And the other spots on there are large cities throughout the state. The state's the size of Texas in area and has the same population as Texas does, so a lot of big cities. In fact, there are 30 cities in that state that still do not have churches of Christ, cities of more than 100,000 people. So we would like to have a church to plant churches in all of those cities. In order to have a church like that, we would need a strategic location, a place easily accessible to millions of people, so a lot of people could get there and be members of it and work with it. It also would need to be in an area where the people have a good level of income. We love the poor people, and we reach out to the poor people, and we convert as many as we can. But the fact is that poor people don't have the financial ability to support preachers and to build buildings and to send out missionaries and support them. And so we needed to be in an area where there were people with a good level of income. And so we bought a piece of property. Mike and I raised $200,000. Maybe some of you remember that. Before we had any members or even a church, all we had was a dream and a vision and faith. So we bought the piece of property in the circle that you see there. And notice that's on the main avenue through that part of the city. Up in the corner up there, there's a beautiful, large shopping mall. It's huge, and they have a Sam's Club and a Walmart and a Home Depot-type store along with it. And then down in the lower right-hand corner, there's another big shopping mall. And the property is between those two. So we knew that Walmart would not locate in Brazil in a place like that unless they did their research and knew that the people there had an income adequate to buy their products, the same way with the other mall. So we felt like that was a great place to start our church. Also, it's easily accessible to people because there are many bus lines that run by that building on that main avenue. Many, many bus lines. Don't know how many, but just all day long they're going by there. And people going by there in cars and trucks and taxis and walking on foot. Hundreds of thousands of people pass by there every week. So it's in a great location. Also, off of the picture there that you can't see is the final terminal of the metro train system that goes all the way from one end of the city by the airport to the other end, which is there by this property. So it is accessible by that metro train system to several million people. And so it's a great location, and the people have a good level of income, has everything that we need, everything except the next slide. Change the next slide for me, please, if you can. Also, in order to have a church like that, we need a highly visible and attractive building designed for work and not just for worship and classes. I'm not downplaying the importance of worship and classes. That's essential, and we need that. But we also wanted it to be a place where people didn't just go and worship and go to classes, but where people worked and served and evangelized. And so it would be designed in such a way that we could train workers and we could prepare teams, we could send them out to plant other churches and work in benevolent projects and all the rest. So we had an architect to design the building, and there is the building that he designed. That's not really the building. That's a model of the building that the architect built. That's what it will look like when it's finished. The building actually is on sloping ground that slants away from the street sharply to the street below. And so it's a four-story building, or will be a four-story building. And what you see there will be the fourth story with an auditorium that will seat about 500 people. But there'll be three stories down below that. So in order for a church to be large enough to be self-supporting and have the resources to do a great work, it needs to have 500 to 1,000 members. I attend the church, the Sunset Congregation in Lubbock, and Sunset, as you probably know, is a congregation with about 1,400 in attendance. And the church, that because it is that large, has the resources to send out missionaries all over the world. And they have many, many missionaries. But not only do they have many missionaries, but they have what we call the Sunset International Bible Institute, which is a school for training preachers and church workers. And this that you see was the opening chapel of the Sunset International Bible Institute this year. And they have flags there that represent all the different countries that those students are going to go to when they graduate. The El Dorado Church, even though it's still rather small and young, it has about 100 in attendance, has great potential. Most of the members of the church are not new Christians, young converts, but rather they're people who are converted in other congregations and have come there to be a part of a new church with a great vision. And so these people are people who want to work and serve and who are able to preach and to teach and to do evangelistic work and all of the other things that the church needs. There are women there who are capable of leading the women's work and helping the women to evangelize. So they now support a full-time worker, a full-time preacher in the congregation. Here's the auditorium. It will seat about 125 people, and like that other congregation I mentioned, they're having 100 to 125 people in their services, so they also have a problem. They're going to need a larger facility very soon. The church has great potential also, because it is the international distribution center for World Bible School. Several years ago, I had the World Bible School courses translated into Portuguese, which is spoken in Brazil, and printed there. And now all those courses are stored in the El Dorado Church building and sent out from there all over Brazil and even to several African countries where they speak Portuguese. Daniel Niemeyer, that you see there, is the director of the World Bible School in Portuguese, shown with his wife Ieda, who works with him. And they're members of the El Dorado congregation. And so they're having an impact on all of Brazil and even beyond with World Bible School that many of you are familiar with. But also 3 years ago, I began a school of evangelism there. We don't call it a school of preaching because it's not exactly that. It's more than that. It's a school that has the purpose of training men and women to be very evangelistic and to have a passion for evangelism. The director of the school is Giovanni Vantuil that you see there, and he's shown with his wife, Marisa, with their son, Thiago, who's getting married next month. I don't know if that's why he's looking sad or not, but he has graduated from the university already. And then the daughter, Dorcas, is graduating in December from the School of Evangelism. At the same time, she has two more years to go to graduate in law. So a wonderful family. And Giovanni is a wonderful choice for the director of the school because he has planted a number of churches himself, and he has trained many workers and to be preachers and teachers and church planters. So he's a great choice. These were the first students that we had 3 years ago when we started the school. And the school is a two-year school. They go to class in the mornings, and then in the afternoons and evenings, they go out evangelizing. And so by the time they finish 2 years in the school, they will not only have studied every book in the Bible and the other courses that they need, but they will have had a tremendous amount of experience in personal evangelism and seeking lost and erring members of the church and campaigns and all of that. And that's what we wanted to happen. In its first 2 years, the school had 220 baptisms and restorations, about half of each. And they like to say, we had 220 people saved. You say, well, but half of them were just restored. But if they were unfaithful in the church and fallen away, they were lost, weren't they? Of course they were. And so the Bible says if you restore someone who is unfaithful, who is in sin, you save a soul from death and you cover a multitude of sins. So they did have 220 people saved. This was the first graduation service. And the man that you see on the right up there is Julio. And he was hired to be the preacher of the El Dorado Church before he ever graduated. And then the other man in the middle there, Antonio, was hired to be one of the two preachers in the Alipi Gemelo Church, the first one that I showed you. And then the young lady that's standing beside me there, Jaiza, her father is an elder of that church, the Alipi Gemelo Church. And he was in a class that my daughter Melody taught when she was 12 years old, and we were just starting that church. And the second day we had services in a house there, these two little boys came. One of them was Marquinhos. He kept coming, and he was old enough, he was baptized, kept coming, and today's an elder, and that young lady is his daughter. So it was exciting to see several generations there in the work. And I have that privilege since I've been working there since 1967, then I can see the result of the work all through the years. These are the ones that are going to be graduating in December of this year. You may think, well, that little baby, surely she's not going to graduate. And that little girl over there, surely she's not going to graduate. Well, I'll tell you why they're in the picture. Because their mothers were studying in the school and they had no place to leave the children, no one to leave them with. And so they brought them to class every day. So for 2 years, that little baby and that little girl have been in class. So they're not graduating, but they're very much a part of the team there of people who are graduating. These people are from several different congregations, and they'll go back to those congregations and help them to be more evangelistic and to have greater growth. Going back to the Sunset International Bible Institute, it has continued to grow through the years. It's 50 years old, and today they have about 200 on the campus who are studying in the building there, including the AIM program. And then they have what they call satellite schools in nearly every state of the United States. Besides that, they have what they call branch schools in 40 different countries. They have 69 branch schools, and they're all connected with Sunset International Bible Institute. They use the same curriculum and SIBI, that we call it, awards their diplomas to them that are even recognized here in the United States. So they're able, SIBI and the Sunset Church working together are having a tremendous impact all over the world. They have a saying there at Sunset that the sun never sets on the work of Sunset, and that's really true. The teachers go all the time back and forth to the schools, and you kind of know how that is, don't you? So we have a dream that the school of evangelism in El Dorado will be the same way, that it will continue to grow. Oh, that's that picture right there is the flag room. That's where they have chapel every morning. And this was at the World Vision workshop that they have in January each year, and that's in the Family Life Center. So this has kind of been a model for us as we dream of what the El Dorado Church can be. We want it to become a church that's large enough that will have the resources to be able to train workers and then to send those workers out and support them as they go to other cities and plant churches and help them build buildings in those other cities where they plant churches. But there's just one big problem that's keeping the El Dorado Church from becoming the church of our vision. And I don't think it wants to show the problem. There it is. There's the problem. That's the front of the church. Some of you have seen that before. And it was like that 4 years ago, and it's still like that. We, for the last 4 years, have not been doing any construction there. We've kind of been waiting on the church to see if they're going to really be serious about growing and achieving the vision. And several months ago, the church communicated with Mike and me, and they said, "We're ready. We're ready to start building again and to finish the front of it." And we are able to provide almost half of the cost of construction. So that's marvelous that the church there can do that. So they'll provide half of it, and I'll raise the other half. This is between the building and the sidewalk is this deep gully. We've got to do something about that. We can't have people walking into the building and falling in the gully. So that has to be taken care of. This picture shows a red rectangle. The red rectangle is the part that we've already built. And then outside of that and above that is the part that we haven't built yet. And we don't plan to build that part on top. When they get this part finished, then we will say to them, "We've done our part. Now as you grow and really need more room, you will have the resources to do that for yourself. And nobody will have to raise it from the U.S. So we're counting on them to do that in the future, like that first church that I showed you did. Right now, there's no front entrance to the building. To get in, people have to go down a narrow pedestrian walkway and go in the side door that you see right there. And so when people go by the front of it, there's no sign on it. The city will not allow us to put a sign up there saying El Dorado Church of Christ until we finish the front of it and landscape it. And there's no front entrance, so all these hundreds of thousands of people that pass by there, they look at that and they said, "Boy, look at that abandoned construction project there. I wonder if they'll ever finish that. I wonder what it is," you know. And so when we can get the front of it built and looking attractive, they will be able very much easier to have the kind of growth that we want them to have. Here's a drawing that shows the situation right now. This right here, this orange line, is the pedestrian walkway going down to the side door. And down here is a parking garage. The city requires us to have parking for 30 cars. And then right here is the level that they're meeting in right now, auditorium and classrooms. Eventually, it'll be all classrooms. And then the part up here is something they started building but never did finish, so it's an unfinished floor, but we have big plans for it. so we're restarting the construction of that building. And to do that, we need to fill in that gully so nobody will fall in it. And we need to landscape the front of the building. The city has even allowed us to use some of their property in front of the building with the understanding that we'll landscape it and make it beautiful and not an eyesore. So we need to do that. And then we need to finish the ramp that goes down into the parking garage. We have the parking garage, but we can't get down in there right now, so it doesn't help very much. And then we need to provide a temporary front entrance, and then this will cost about $71,000. And the church there will provide almost half of that, and I have already raised nearly all of the rest of it. So they're in good shape with the first stage. And so here's what needs to be done. You see the front area landscaped. Obviously, it's going to be more beautiful than this picture that I drew. But it's going to be landscaped and be beautiful. You see the pedestrian walkway going down to the side door. And you can barely see a little bit of the parking garage on the bottom. And then you can see the level there that we're meeting in right now. And then that level on top, that will be an auditorium, a beautiful, attractive auditorium that will seat about 300 people. And if they get that and they grow too big for that, they can just go to double services on Sunday morning and handle 600 people. If they go that big and outgrow that, then they'll have the resources to build the top level and finish the building. You see that this building also will have a front entrance. People can just walk straight in from the sidewalk, and then it'll have a sign up there going all the way across the building saying El Dorado Church of Christ, and that will be seen by everybody, all those hundreds of thousands of people that pass by. In addition to finishing the building, we hope to bring the following full-time Brazilian workers to El Dorado to work with them. First, Rui and Nadia Diogo graduated from the Sunset School of Preaching some years ago and also from Lubbock Christian University. And they're highly experienced. They're doing a great work in Brazil. But they have a vision that's exactly the kind of vision we have for the El Dorado Church. And so they would like to come in July of next year, hopefully, and work with that. And then Alex and Anna Giraudo. Alex is the son of a man who's been a preacher for years, one of our early converts in the work there. And he graduated from Fried Hartman University. He's an excellent praise leader, in fact, one of the best in Brazil. And besides that, he's an excellent personal evangelism and youth worker and worker with young couples. And those two families, together with Julio, the preacher that they're supporting already, will form a really great team that have all the skills that are needed for a team. So with them working together and with the front of the church, with the church finished up, the building, then we feel like they can have the kind of growth that they need to have to be the church of our vision. Now, I've been working in Brazil since 1967, training workers and helping them plant churches. Now, I'm now 83 years and 5 days old, and I won't be able to continue this work much longer, probably, 30, 40 more years maybe. So when I have to leave the work in Brazil, I want to leave something there that will continue this work that I've been doing all through the years. And that something will be this large, dynamic missionary church in El Dorado that will continue to train workers and send out workers and plant new churches in all of the large cities throughout that state where we do not yet have churches. So we ask you, like we're asking people everywhere, to help us. A lot of you have helped in the past to build the first part of that building and to get the work started. And now we just need to bring it to completion. And if you're able and would like to help, then you can make a contribution. You can give it to Bob Milligan or one of the elders and help us to finish this work. I go to a little town called Happy, Texas. You ever been to Happy, Texas? Happy Texas is a town of 600 people. And when you go into the town, there's a big sign there that says, Happy Texas, the home of 599 happy people and one old grouch. I don't know who the grouch is, but I've met a lot of happy people there. And they have a church there that has about 80 in attendance, a very excellent church. Every time I go there, once a year, they give me $1,500. But one time, when I was making a report, at the end of the report, I said, now I know the church is going to give me $1,500, but it might be that some of you in the congregation would like to give above and beyond your regular church contribution. And maybe you just happen to have $5,000 lying around that you would like to give. And I laughed, and they laughed, because anybody knows a little town like that with 600 people, a little church like that, not going to have anybody in it with $5,000 to give. So the church gave me $1,500, and I went home, and the next week I received a check from one of the members of that congregation, a man there, with how much do you think was? $5,000. That happens several times. So there may be somebody here that you just really like to give to missionary work. I don't want you to take anything away from your regular contribution, because the church here needs that for the work they're doing. But if you can and want to give beyond that, then help us. We're asking for one-time contributions, our monthly help, to get this work done. And then for many, many years, this church will continue to plant other churches without needing help from brethren and churches here in the United States. And they won't even miss me when I'm gone. Okay? Maybe there's somebody here tonight is subject to the Lord's invitation. If so, we want to give you an opportunity to let your need be known, and the church here is ready to help you, pray for you, do anything they can that you need. Let's stand and let's sing.